to kind of start out with, this is the 31st year of the festival running, but you guys have changed a little bit from the 30th anniversary. First of all, let's start with the title itself. You guys are now Aglyph. It is a different all-inclusive title, if you will, from what you guys have been in the past.
Yeah, so, I mean, in years past, we had been the Awesome Game Lesbian International Film Festival, and we started talking basically right after the festival ended last year about wanting to change our name and preserving the Aglyph brand and the title, because we felt like that our name just wasn't inclusive to all of our LGBTQ, brothers and sisters, and everyone who identifies, outside of gay or lesbian. And so we had the discussion of, how can we keep the Aglyph name and still, be inclusive and relevant, and, what does that look like? And through a couple meetings and, brainstorming and talking about, how that name would look, we kind of just fell into, this name that we're now calling ourselves, the All Genders, Lifestyles, Identities Film Festival, which we feel like is more inclusive than our previous name. And, we wanted to open up the festival beyond just, the gay and lesbian name in the title itself.
And you guys have always concentrated on all the different genders in your festivals, but this year in particular, I was kind of really excited to see that you guys have like looked at the transgender community specifically, bringing in Jake and Hannah from England, and then PJ's opening night film Caller Gonda. There's a lot of newness to the films that you guys chose this year. It's a very diverse group of films you have this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know a year from now, in 2019, what, is going to be talked and reported on in, LGBT culture, or, what's the happenings, or, what storylines, or, how do you shape up year to year the different social issues and injustices and the different thematic themes that, are prevalent through our lineup. And so, it was just kind of happenstance in some regard. I mean, I've been talking to Jake since 2016 about bringing him to Aglyph in some capacity, whether it be a juror, a filmmaker, or, something else. And, as I started brainstorming more and more about it, it felt like, this was a really rare opportunity that we could get to present him with our Breakthrough Award and someone whose work that I've been following since I started, as the program director of Aglyph in 2014. I clearly remember, when I took the job and got to Austin, he was, one of the first people that reached out to me and emailed me, and, we had a lot of discussions about his film, and I told him I was new to the job, and it was something, it was a bonding, it was a friendship that was building there. And, I admire his work, and I think he's a very talented filmmaker and actor and artist, and the fact that, he is, an activist as well in England for the transgender community. It just seemed like the right opportunity to invite him for the festival this year and to present the Breakthrough Award, and with someone like PJ Raval, who in these parts being Austin, he's a decorated and talented filmmaker, and he's well respected, and he has many peers that know his work, enjoy his films, his cinematography, the subjects that he's shot for his documentaries and short films. And I knew that he was making, at the time, it was just an untitled transgender documentary, and I knew he was going back and forth to the Philippines, but I didn't really know the story that he, was constructing, or, the doc that he was making. And then it just so happened that I was going to be attending the Tribeca Film Festival, as an industry delegate, and it when they announced their lineup, there it was Colorganda, you know, speaking of world premiere Tribeca. So I knew, you know, deep down that we had a shot, you know, of getting the film just to play the festival. But then when I actually went to Tribeca and watched it, you know, I knew it was something that I wanted to have as our opening night film, because in my 5 years, we've never opened with a local filmmaker's film. And I think it's just important to show that, you know, we are an international film festival, even though many of the films we show are, you know, American or North American or, you know, predominantly English-speaking films. And, you know, whenever you get an opportunity to have a film, you know, that whether it's local or the filmmaker is local, I mean, it just served as a great jumping off point for this year's festival.
Kind of keeping with that local theme, I know I was really excited to see that you guys are honoring Yen Tan, who's a North Texan, and we're really proud of him up here. But what went to the idea of honoring him the way you guys are? I think it's really special that you guys are giving out an award to Yen for his work, and showing not only his most recent film, but you're also showing Pit Stop and Chow, and it seems like it's a real big honor for him to have his whole lexicon showcased.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, you know, we had shown Yen's short film in 2016, which was also called 1985. And, you know, I would see Yen around town. I've been here since 2014, and he was one of the first people I met, you know, and I had seen Pit Stop at Sundance in 2013. So I was familiar with Yen and his work. And, I mean, what I come to find out later on is that, you know, he, you know, not only is he a writer, director, but, you know, he's an editor, he creates movie posters, he creates television ads, you know, he's an artist, a designer, and I mean, this is just something that I don't think a lot of people know about Yen, and, you know, his history of, you know, moving to Dallas in his late teens and being there and, you know, not really being a trained filmmaker per se, and just, you know, making these films, you know, on his own basically since 2002. And, you know, I mean, Yen is someone I have a lot of respect for as well, same as PJ, you know, as a local fixture in the, you know, the Austin filmmaking community and, you know, the queer filmmaking community as well. And, you know, I mean, these are friends of mine, and it's important that, you know, you honor even people in your, you know, in your backyard. And, you know, I mean, yeah, we're flying Jake and Hannah in from London, but at the same time, like, yeah, it's a very important figure, not only in the Austin or Texas film scene, but in the national scene too, especially with the breakout of 1985 this year. And so when I saw the film at South by Southwest, I was just doing some research, and it just, you know, it just kind of dawned on me that it was like, oh, his second film, Chow, is celebrating 10 years. Oh, and Pit Stop is celebrating 5 years. You know, so I just kind of had the idea of, you know, doing a tribute to him for all the great work that he's done, you know, not only in the past 10 years, but in his career. You know, and you know, I mean, we showed Pit Stop 2 weeks ago at a free screening. So it's not technically in the festival, but it was kind of like a, you know, it was leading up to it. You know, and we talked a little bit about it, and it's like, well, I feel like I'm getting this tribute award, but my career's not over. You know, it's not meant for it to be over at this point. It's just, you know, you've already done so much, and you have your whole career ahead of you. You know, I mean, a lot of people wait 50 years to be honored with a tribute award or a career award. And, you know, it's just, again, it kind of makes sense that it was like, you know, I've been in town for 4 years, and he's been making films since 2002, and, you know, 1985, he's getting some of the best reviews of his career with the film, and, you know, why not highlight that and make, you know, make it a tribute, and the fact that, you know, there are talented filmmakers, you know, straight or queer, you know, coming out of the Austin, Texas, you know, out of the Austin film scene. And so, again, it just made a lot of sense, and it was very, you know, serendipitous where you have a year where PJ has a new film, and Yen has a new film, and, you know, I mean, we're the longest-running film festival in Austin, so why not highlight and honor these talented artists and filmmakers at the festival and give them the biggest platform that you can, and, you know, just show other people that, you know, that this is a serious festival, and the fact that we have a lot of homegrown talent, and we want to showcase them.
No, I was really excited to see your closing night film. John Wildman was kind enough to shoot me some screeners, but Mapplethorpe is, I think, going to be an amazing way to close out the festival. Can you talk about making that kind of the end film? And I think it encompasses an important figure, but also I think it's a movie that can, you know, have a pretty good, strong theatrical release and should be kind of a nice boom for the community as a whole on you know, a national look.
Right. You're bringing up all these people that I've been friends with. I mean, I've known Andy Moner since 2008 when I was back in Minneapolis, and I was running a music film festival up there called Sound Unseen. And we brought her into town to show her two previous music docs, We Live in Public and Dig, which, you know, We Live in Public I had seen at Sundance this year, and Dig is one of my favorite documentaries of all time. But, you know, she also has this distinguished honor of being the only filmmaker to ever win the grand jury prize at Sundance twice. And when she was at Sound Unseen in 2008, you know, I spent plenty of time with her, and I asked her, you know, what she had upcoming, and she said, well, I'm starting to get, you know, this film going on Robert Mapplethorpe. And, you know, this was 2008. And throughout the years, we had stayed in touch. You know, she had other films in between all that, and I'd be at festivals, and I would check in and just see what was going on with it. And it went through a long process. I mean, I think she spent 11 or 12 years trying to get it, you know, all together and finance and get the money together and get the right cast and location and shooting. And, you know, it was, again, one of these things where I was going to Tribeca and it premiered there. And I was at the premiere and I saw her, and, you know, we had long conversations about how this film would look at A-List. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for Andy, and she's an important American filmmaker, and this is her first narrative film, and to tackle, you know, a subject like Robert Mapplethorpe is not easy. And, you know, he was a very complex person, as many human beings are, but, you know, the fact that he transcended, you know, what it was to be, you know, I mean, me personally, off the record, like, I'm not gay, so, you know, to just have her tell the story of Robert Mapplethorpe, you know, and his career, but also how he, you know, tackled such taboo subjects as, you know, very explicit, you know, photos and various positions of the human body, and, you know, capturing, you know, a whole generation of people that, you know, it woke up to in, like, the late 70s and early 80s, and, you know, pioneering almost this erotica type photography that was very much for a long time, you know, just seen in underground magazines, or, you know, people passing along literature, you know. I mean, not anything that was out public form, or, you know, outside of maybe like a Playboy, a Playgirl, or a Hustler or something. But I mean, these were, you know, very provocative and thought-provoking photos, and the fact that she captures, you know, this time period, and it's really astonishing, especially with Matt Smith's center performance as Mapplethorpe. And, you know, you can definitely see it on the screen that it took a lot of time to put this film together. And, you know, to answer your question, I guess, you know, it made a lot of sense to close with something like Mapplethorpe, because it is a film that, once A-List kicks off, you know, on September 6th, it's a film that people are going to be talking about all theater, or all weekend long at the festival. And that's, you know, you want to build that excitement through your festival all weekend or all week, no matter how long it is. You want people to be looking forward to the films they haven't seen yet. I mean, I get that way when I go to, you know, Sundance or Berlin or Tribeca. It's like, you know, I'm here on day one, but I'm really excited to see something on day four or day five. And, you know, that anticipation of the closing night film and just having such an iconic film, you know, or I guess photographer featured in the first narrative feature ever made on Robert Mapplethorpe, and to have you know, a friend of mine, Ani Timoner, co-writing, produced and directed, to have her be with us is really special.
You brought up Berlin in particular. I'd love to know, Jim, about the fact that you guys have many countries showcasing the festival, but you guys have kind of handpicked some wonderful festival films, and I know you got a few from Berlin. Can you tell me a bit about the festival circuit and how you guys approach looking at films that you might want to bring back to the festival and that kind of process? I think it's really fascinating.
It's not an easy answer, to be quite honest, but I'll give it my best shot, because this was my first time going to Berlin, and it's a massive festival, and it was a bit overwhelming at first, because you have so many films that are just in the festival, so many sidebars and so many conversations, but on top of it they have what's called the EFM, which is the European film market, where they show, 800 films. And it's just an ungodly amount. And, there's films that I saw there at the market that haven't even premiered yet. And so, it was like kind of this, programmer's kind of dream house of just going to see all these different films from all these different countries and to meet all these sales agents and, different distributors, American and foreign. The process with picking the films for the festival, I want to make sure that everyone is represented, as best I can, and to what's available out there. You brought up earlier, we do have quite a few transgender films in the festival this year, but my first 2 years, you could hardly find any. And in just the past recent couple of years, that number has, been staggering, as how many transgender submissions I receive, but then also how many I see on the festival circuit. And I don't expect everyone to love every single movie that is in our festival. you can't please everyone. Everyone's got different tastes. And even people in, Sundance or Cannes or Toronto, they know that they have some films that are, less than perfect. But, you're playing high-profile films with A-list movie stars, and, you don't want to necessarily poo-poo the films before they get screened. But at the same time, I'm just looking for the best content. And, as I said, I'm a straight, white, cisgender male that's running a queer film festival, which is pretty, pretty progressive for a festival to trust me to do. And, I've been in this community now for almost 5 years, and I listen to what people want to hear, what they want to see, and listen to, what types of films they would like to see, or do you know about this? Have you heard about this? I saw a preview for this. So, I'm constantly doing research and talking to other programmers. I do travel a lot. I go to Sundance, Berlin, Tribeca, Frameline. This year I was at Montclair, New Jersey, and then, of course, South by Southwest. But, every year I try to go somewhere different. Next year I'm planning on going to Rotterdam and Berlin in lieu of Sundance. And, I just want to change it up a little bit. And, I think that's healthy for people that are programmers on the festival circuit to change it up as well. Because there are a lot of exciting festivals, worldwide that are playing some really outstanding films, and a lot of them don't get the attention they deserve. And I feel like with A-List, we are, the longest running film festival in Austin, but also, we're a festival that stands out in, the queer festival circuit, this is our 31st year, and, there's very few festivals that are older than us, and, Frameline to celebrate year 42, and Reeling in Chicago, I think, is year 36, 37, but with year 31, we're the same as Atlanta and New Haven, Connecticut, and these are things that people don't, the fact that there's a gay, LGBTQ film festival in New Haven, Connecticut, that's been around 31 years, a lot of people don't know that. You know, and same with Atlanta, because you only think of like the bigger festivals or the mainstream festivals. You know, I mean, even South by Southwest, they didn't start incorporating film, I think, until 1992. We started 87. They started 92. But I mean, yeah, it's kind of a long-winded answer. But yeah, I wanna have films that I feel that are important, that I think other people will find important and informative and educational, but also entertain, because we go to the movies to be entertained. And you know, if you can learn something about, you know, how the Mardi Gras LGBTQ festival started in Australia in the 70s. I mean, we have that film called Riot that explains the whole revolution that the people took to, you know, get their independence to be recognized. And you know, it is again an international film fest, and I just want to make sure that, you know, we've got as many different countries or different thematic storylines or documentaries, and you know, just make sure that everyone, there is something for everyone, I guess.
You brought up the history element of it. I want to kind of ask a question. It may be kind of tough, but with the current political environment, especially in the state of Texas, how important is it for a festival like this to not only exist, but have existed for so long and been an impact in the community, compared to a political system that seems to be taking steps further back in the equality level for all of its state citizens? This is, I don't want to say that you guys are doing anything political, but I think it's the fact that you're here and you've been here for this long. How important is it that AGLIF is a voice in Texas?
Well, I mean, so I'm originally from the Twin Cities in Minneapolis, so I can't really speak on the whole history of Texas politics, but I know it's bad right now. And, you know, I mean, the subconsciously, yeah, there's some films I think that, you know, may represent, you know, the current state affairs and the political aspects of what's happening, you know, in the United States and just in the world. But, you know, I try not to get too heavily invested in that. I don't want it to become like a social studies project. But, I mean, I think it is, you know, or a history project. I mean, I do feel it is important, and the fact that we have been around 31 years, I think, speaks a lot for the community that they have supported a festival here, you know, that started off at the Dolby Theater in 1987 by Scott Dinger, who's still around and, you know, comes to the festival each year. And, you know, I mean, this community has a lot of history, and, you know, it does help that Austin is, you know, I guess, the blue part of the state, if I may say, and, you know, the capital is here, and, you know, last year it was a huge honor to have Mayor Steve Adler speak at opening night, you know, for our 30th anniversary. But, you know, I just think, you know, I'm just someone that just cares about good movies, more importantly, and, you know, it's important that these films are shown in a public forum and that they're open to anyone, you know, just because, you know, we're the LGBTQ film festival doesn't mean that, you know, you're not welcome. I mean, anyone is welcome to our festival, and, you know, I support anyone who wants to buy a badge or tickets and, you know, see the films, and they can make decisions for themselves too. You know, I can't force people to come. I can mention it to people, we can advertise, but I can't, you know, force people to attend the festival. And, you know, I just hope that they want to, and they see something in the lineup that, you know, gets them excited, or, you know, something that they didn't think would come to town, or, you know, something that they didn't know this doc was made on this person, or, you know, again, with like Mapplethorpe, you know, I'm sure, you know, people that follow the festival certainly know that film's around, but, you know, when it gets advertised that we're closing with it, some people may be hearing about it for the first time. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of films that have a lot of political climates to them, but, you know, I'm not going to get in arguments with people about, you know, whatever their political stance is or what their religion is. I mean, that's not my place, you know. It's just, I look for good films that I feel like deserve an audience, and I hope people, you know, will want to take the time and the money to invest in our festival that we have been doing, and the fact that it has been around for 30 years does say something, that it does merit its own, you know, awareness, and the fact that, you know, we are an important fixture in Austin, you know, and not just in the queer community, but Austin, you know, Austin city limits, you know. I mean, this is one of the festivals that stood the longest in the United States, and, you know, I hope that we continue to keep progressing each year with our festival and with the films that we show, and, you know, we bring in more and more audiences that, you know, will come and see the films that we have to offer.
So glad you brought up ACL. You guys have always had a great music video element to the festival. Can you tell me a bit about that, and that being also something that you guys champion? Music in Austin obviously is its own beast, if you will, and you guys are a part of that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a big reason why we're in September. I mean, because ACL now is 2 weekends in October. I think this festival back in the day was in October, and I think that's when ACL was just 1 weekend. So, no, I mean, you know, like I said too, like I come from the Twin Cities, which is a huge music hub as well, and I'm still the director of a music film festival there called Sound Unseen, you know, which is celebrating 19 years this year. So, music for me has always been a huge factor, and. Yeah, to come to a great music town like Austin and be a program director for Maycliffe, you know, it's an honor. You know, it's something I don't take for granted, and I understand a lot of people would love to have my job and the opportunity, and I'm thankful for it every day that I get to do this job. And sometimes it doesn't feel like a job, but I mean, the music aspect to it is just, you know, I mean, that's some good bread and butter right there. You know, if you could find an LGBT film with music in it, I'm, you know, for me that's a home run, that's a slam dunk. And you know, it is something that is important to Austinites. The fact that we do have this great music history, and we do have a great film history. You know, and the fact that luminaries like you know, Terrence Malick and Mike Judge, Richard Linklater and Kat Chandler and Michael Tully and the Zellner Brothers and you know, Todd Rohall and Andrew Wachowski. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. And, you know, and you can say the same thing about music. I mean, you got everyone from Willie Nelson to Spoon to, and you'll know us by the Trail of Dead, and Explosions in the Sky and Shaky Graves. And I mean, you know, it's just, there's so much happening in the Austin arts community. And, you know, it's fun to sometimes, you know, work with these people and, you know, be recognized for the work that you do outside of, you know, going to a movie theater and, you know, or going to a music venue. You know, I mean, I think Austinites take a lot of pride in supporting, you know, their fellow musician or filmmaker or artist. And, you know, there's a lot of love and support here for all the arts here. And, you know, it's a great town for, you know, music, film, and, you know, barbecue. So, you know, it's, yeah, I mean, I don't know what more to say. It's just, you know, it's a great town.
So I've got to ask, this will be the fifth year you guys are doing a secret screening. Yes. I know you don't want to reveal anything right now, but is there any hints you can give, or even just talk about the fact that you guys do have a secret screening, and that is something that really helps with the intrigue of the festival, and I think's a real big hit. It always seems to be, these last few years, a major part of the festival.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's like, how do I explain this? So, it was an idea that I had when I came from Minneapolis to Austin to do a secret screening. I had gone to the Seattle International Film Festival in 2007 or 2008, and they do something called the Secret Festival, where they would have three or four films that, basically, if you wanted to attend them, you had to sign, like, a waiver. And this was, you know, I mean, yeah, smartphones are around, but, you know, Twitter was not nearly the size it is now, and same with Facebook and Instagram, you know, all the social media. And I always kind of just liked the idea of having something at the festival that no one knew publicly what it was, because, I mean, really every movie is a secret screen, if you think about it. I mean, you can see trailers, you can read synopses, but until you see it for the first time with your own eyes, you can't really explain what it is, in a thorough plot line or storyline. And so that idea came from the Secret Festival, but then I loved this idea that John Waters used to do in Baltimore, where he would show kind of random secret films, and people could come and see them for free, but if they wanted to leave, they had to pay. And so I always thought that idea was kind of funny, and so I wanted to incorporate some type of secret aspect to the festival, and I think it's really paid off, because it does give a film exposure that it wouldn't otherwise necessarily get. I mean, it does stand out as the one film that no one knows what the title is. And so, my first couple years when we did it, I think it took a little bit of explaining for the concept to kind of, sink in, I guess. And then last year, it was the first time that we actually invited the writer-director to attend. And while, he was really excited, he called me a couple of days before the festival, and he was like, "So Jim, I'm coming to town, and I have friends in Austin that I want to tell my film is screening. You know, what do I say to them?" And I told him, I just said, "Look, just tell them that your film's the secret film. Just tell them not to, say anything more." And, his friends came, and they knew it was his film, but they still, had that intrigue as if you paid admission to go see any other movie that you're about to see for the first time. It is kind of a secret what the film is going to be about, even though you do see advertisements and read about them. But, there's certain movies that I know people have seen hundreds of times that I've never seen. So I'm not one to talk about a movie if I haven't seen it. I'm not going to write a book report if I haven't read the book. So, it does give that, it gives it like a moment, it's like, it feels like an event, you want to be in on something that is special, something that is very limited, not to say that it comes across as like an elitism or anything like that. It's just something that I wanted to add to the festival to kind of spice it up a little bit and, like you said, kind of build some intrigue. And what's great about our movie this year is that, it's having its U.S. premiere at AGLIF, and it was something that the filmmaker, again, trusts me very much to go along with. And it's a film that's played at, two or three festivals, but none of them have been in the United States. So we're flying in the writer-director, and they'll be present for the screening, and it'll be the first time anyone in the United States sees it in, a public theater. And, whether you like the film or not, that's up to the person who buys the ticket or the badge. Like, I can't, I just try to do the best I can in scheduling, and programming the films that I've seen throughout the year. And just, I hope that people, find it entertaining and exciting, and there'll be some good questions for the Q&A, I imagine, so.
Well, Jim, to kind of close things out, I know we're really close. We're only a few days out, but we'll be posting this tomorrow. Where can people find any information about the festival website so that, if they need to grab a last-minute badge or some tickets, how can they do that?
Yeah, so, we're all over the social media, so, you can like us and follow us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And then, our main website where we're selling individual tickets and badges is AGLIFF, AGLIFF.org. And, you can go there, and there's all the films are listed day by day. And, the great thing about the badge is, badges get priority. So if you buy a badge, then you'll be the first into the theater seated, because the theaters are general admission, and whereas an individual ticket, you'll still get access to seeing the film, but you just, you know, you'll be seated after the badge holders. So that's kind of the incentive to be a badge holder. But yeah, I would say the website, gatecliff.org. Otherwise, you know, we're always updating Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as well.
Perfect.